is up, everyone? We are here for another episode of the Fireside Yankees podcast. My name is Ryan Garcia. I'm joined by Chris Drew and by Jacob as well. Aaron Judge had some spicy comments he made to the media. We'll talk about those and whether those were actually spicy or not. We'll talk about some of the stuff with Jason Dominguez and Spencer Jones and their roles on the roster, as there is a logjam with them. And Brian Cashman talked about that with the media. And Carlos LeGrande just, I mean, he was all over social media after dotting 102.6 to three-time MVP Aaron Judge, sandwiched in between a couple long balls. But, you know, as Jacob, the phrase I'm going to steal from you, iron sharpens iron. We'll get into all that and more right here on Fireside Yankees. Like, subscribe, turn on that notification bell to support the page. If you're listening to this on Apple or Spotify, download and leave a five-star rating as well. And without further ado, let's just jump straight into everything. Jacob, we'll start with you, man. How are you doing today, my man?
I'm doing really well, man. It's really starting to feel like baseball season is upon us. We're now at the latter half of February. The days are getting a little bit longer, and we're seeing these videos come out of camp. And it's just like, I'm working on my videos and stuff during the day, and every half an hour I check Twitter, in the morning and the early afternoon, I'm checking Twitter, refreshing, seeing what the beat guys are putting out for us to watch. And there's something new every day now. It's pretty sweet.
Chris, how are we doing, man? And I have to agree, I love seeing the videos right now, man. I'm loving it.
Yeah, videos are good to see. I also watch a good amount of college baseball, too, so it's good to see kind of that get off the ground. Obviously, like, it's like a nice little appetizer before we get, like, the actual spring training stuff. But no, it's been really cool to see the stuff on the timeline. It's really what it is. It feels like baseball. I think that warms the weather up wherever you're at, 10 degrees, seeing those videos. So, it's good. It's really good to be a baseball fan, 100%.
Again, baseball's back. Our turn. It's our time.
Our turn.
Basketball doesn't exist. Football's over.
College basketball is cool. Miami Hurricanes are back this year.
I will respect college basketball, and I have to respect hockey because I have to respect it. I just have to. Like,
and the Olympics, and we respect the Olympics.
Yes, and I respect the Olympics as well. But honestly, more important than all of these sports or whatever you want to call them, Carlos LeGrande dotted a 102.6 mile per hour fastball to get Aaron Judge swinging in live BP. Obviously, live bullpens. Hitters are still behind. Like, it's not about the fact that he struck out Aaron Judge. It's about the fact that he threw a ball 102.6 miles per hour, and the freakish arm talent, and the fact he's got a plus changeup. I mean, there's so much we can get into with Carlos LeGrande. Chris, we'll start with you. Jacob, I know you're rearing to go, so we'll let you kind of get it after that. But Chris, why did that video impress you so much? What's so impressive about LeGrande, in your opinion?
I mean, it's just, well, first of all, like, what a video in totality, right? 6'7" versus 6'7". We had, like, two, like, huge freaks. It's really nice to see. Generally speaking, it's like, you know, I saw the first video, what Aaron Judge took him deep on, what, 99.8? And then, like, the next at bat, it's like, okay, let's kick it up a notch, right? You caught up to me there. Let's go. And Jacob said it earlier, iron sharpens iron, which usually I hear in, like, the football sphere, not so much in the baseball sphere, but two parts. Like, I'm really impressed in the middle of February, this monster throwing 102.6, right? And then I believe 2 days before, one of the beat writers said, yeah, I'm here to see LeGrande. Hey, looks like the pop isn't what I thought it would be, like, velocity-wise. And I'm like, oh, like, is he kind of scaling it back a little bit to try to find the control? And then, like, 2 days later, you start to see the gas is there. I like the big monsters that do things that other people can't do, the things that, you know, aren't really, they're outside of work ethic. And the same way that, like, strikeouts are an issue with, like, the big tall guys like Spencer Jones, the walks have been an issue for LeGrande. But, like, 102 painted on the corner like that is a ridiculous kind of thing that makes you feel like we're going to see him in pinstripes sooner rather than later. To overreact on a whatever day it is.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more with all that you just said. I do think it is important. We finally got the name clarification, LeGrande. We've been saying LaGrange, LeGrande, all these other things. It's LeGrande, and everyone knows his name now, which wasn't the case a few days ago. I know I've been tweeting about this guy forever. Ryan's been tweeting about this guy forever. Everyone who breaks down Yankees prospects has known that the arm talent is there. But just to see it in action at big league camp, even though they're doing live ABs in mid-February, and we're this hyped up about this guy, that just tells you how much juice the arm has. And it's like, I've seen some people are like, oh, he's throwing 102 this early. That's not, he shouldn't be going max effort. But the thing I love about it is Judge takes him deep, and he has that Sorry. He has the competitiveness about him.
Tick up. Yeah.
Tick it up. Yes. He literally, it's like the adrenaline hit him just in a live AB because he got beat once. And that's really cool because this is a guy who we maybe could see in our bullpen later this season. So I love to see that competitiveness, that fire, the ability to dial it up to another level that he has in the tank. Because it's not like he was sitting 98 this past year. Right. The fact that he has 102, 103 in the tank means that he can live a 98. That's his floor. That's like his average. Then he can go up from that if need be. So I'm super excited about the guy. And also, I do want to say, I've heard this from baseball people before, especially from pitchers. Once you get over 100 miles per hour, you're not allowed to round up. So 102.6. No, he did not throw 103 through 102.6. So I'm going to try to refrain from the 103 talk going forward.
What do you guys make of Judge hitting him at 100 miles per hour early? Because like, I always feel like, I guess in my short memory, Judge seems to be like, it takes a little bit longer to get the timing down as a bigger guy. But it felt crazy to see him, I mean, at 100 miles per hour just go.
Dude, he crushed that too. Oh my goodness.
Aren't we used to like Aaron Judge taking a little bit, I mean, seeing pitches at first?
I think the World Baseball Classic is why. Like he clearly got it going earlier because he's Captain America for this, and you know, unfortunately, you know, I got to watch Captain America, right. And I've got to watch him. I got to root for him to go down against DR, but I don't have to root for him to go down until the final. I will say, like, I'm really excited to watch him essentially beat the crap out of his entire bracket, because his bracket is there is not, outside of Mexico, there should not be a team in that bracket that beats the United States. So I do think they're going to go to the semis at the very least, and I would be stunned if they don't go to the finals. So I think this is going to be like, it's time for Aaron Judge to get some more points. You know, we got to bump the PR a little bit, you know?
And that's a good point. I just remember feeling like early on in spring training, like last year, like his first couple times, like facing Schlitler, like didn't really swing the bat. It's kind of just like, all right, like easing in, and then had honestly a terrible spring training. And then the year before, you know, the bad spring training boiled into like a bad first month of the season as he was like getting the timing down. So it was to me like kind of, oh, like shoot, Cap's here early. Like we're here early, hitting 100 miles per hour, taking it deep. And even you said it before the show, Ryan, like even the long flyout he had, it was like that ball was crushed.
Speaking of slow starts, you guys remember in early 2024 when there's people tweeting that we should send him down to AAA?
Yeah, dude, after the really slow start and then proceeded to, what, hit 360 the rest of the year?
Yeah. There was talk about...
He had
about
his best season.
Yeah, there were talks ridiculous about, like, his zone contact rate in 23, and it's like, dude, we're 1 month in. Like, we're 1 month in. He proceeds to have his best year ever. Like, that was his best... I think that's his best offensive season by OPS plus and WRC plus, so yes. Not even subjective. That is objectively his best offensive season. Yeah, like, that was... I mean, that season, that post-April was just an insane tear to watch. A couple of notes on LeGrande. I looked at his average fastball velocity, which was provided by Lance Brzdowski. I think that's how you pronounce it. I'm really upset if I butcher it. But it was 98.5 miles per hour last year. I looked at every pitcher in the pitch tracking era who had at least 120 innings pitched to kind of, you know, you want comparable workloads to what LeGrande had. I understand it's not a perfect science. Some of these guys throw more innings than 120, but I think it gets us close. Bobby Miller, Hunter Green, Noah Syndergaard, Paul Skene. So the only four pitchers out of over, I think it's 1,900 pitchers pitching seasons with 120 innings or more pitched. Those are only four seasons where a guy sat higher than LeGrande with a workload similar or greater to LeGrande's in 2025. So I do think there is this, as Chris mentioned, he's an outlier. He's a freak of nature. And his velocity actually spiked by about 1.4 miles per hour from 2024. He sat 97.1 in single A, jumps up to 98.5, adds 3 inches of ride. And I don't want it to get lost in the conversation that Carlos LeGrande has a plus changeup. Carlos LeGrande's sweeper had a 50% whiff rate, and his gyro slider, which is, you know, for people at home, gyro slider more prioritizing drop a little more, has more velo usually than a sweeper. This pitch had a whiff rate of over 40% as well. He didn't have a single non-fastball pitch generate a whiff rate below 40% last year. And he throws 100, and he actually has hit 103 in game action last year. In a minor league game, it was 103.1 exactly, so no rounding up either.
Okay, good.
That is the talent we're talking about here. A 7% increase in strike percentage year over year from 24 to 25. Like, he is a freak of nature. I know like Aaron Boone compared him to Dylan Betances, and I want to get into this conversation about starter reliever. I'm not saying he should never come up as a reliever and then graduate to a starter. But what I am saying is I want him to get a real chance to become a major league starting pitcher.
It feels starter mix, Ryan. Like, I'm sold.
He's got a starter mix. There are so many people who conflate command issues and big velo with they got nothing else. He has three plus secondaries, and he might be able to add more. He can't add like a 93, 94 mile per hour cutter. He can't maybe add a two-seamer slash sinker. He throws so hard, he doesn't actually have to have a good sinker shape. It's kind of like Schindler. It could be the worst two-seam sinker shape you've seen in your life. It's 98. Like, that's going to do something to you. Velo has a very strong positive correlation with success. So, Jacob, I'll start with you here. Starter or reliever, like, what are you seeing with Carlos Legrande? What would you bet on at this point in time as his major league outcome?
Well, I don't want to sound like a real estate mogul right here, but location, location, location. That is the key. If he can locate, not even, he doesn't have to be a Greg Maddux, right? If he can locate to the point where he's not walking five batters per nine innings, he's going to be a good starting pitcher, in my opinion. The stuff is there, as you listed off all those stats about his secondary pitches. He's got three good secondaries, plus the sinker is going to be able to get people off the four-seamer a little bit. That's a five-pitch mix. That's enough, as long as he's not walking the world. And I also have heard from people who worked for Somerset last year that he's struggled when he has a fast base runner on. He's struggled with being able to stay focused on the mound while he has action behind him. So I'm kind of interested to see if he could take a step forward in that sense this year, because if he's going to be a high-walk guy, he can't be a guy who gets rattled with guys on the bases. But yeah, I think definitely you can succeed with a high walk rate if you are good enough at the other aspects of pitching. Like Blake Snell. Blake Snell had a 13% walk rate in 2023, and he won the Cy Young Award. So I feel like there's a lot of people out there who aren't as familiar with his pitch mix that are already writing him off as a reliever. And first of all, I wouldn't be that surprised to see him come up as a reliever late this season, because I doubt he'll be fully developed as a starting pitcher by August or September. So if we need relief help, I wouldn't be surprised to see him. But I think the long-term project with him is to be as a starting pitcher, and I would be kind of disappointed if that doesn't work out. But the idea of him being a Betances-type reliever to fall back on is always intriguing. So I do think it brings his floor up to have that option, but I really want to see him as a starting pitcher.
I'd agree. I think he's likely a starter moving forward, but I think if we see him this year, we'll be out of the bullpen role. So I'm kind of right there in lockstep with Jacob there. So,
yeah, I think as well, I'd have to say if he came up this year, it would probably be as a reliever. But I'll say this right now. Look, probability-wise, I agree it would be as a reliever. I'm going to go out and I'm going to say right here, Carlos Legrande comes up in 26 as a starter. That's I'm gonna plant my flag here, because I just believe in this stuff. And look, maybe it bites me in the ass. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I'm a couple of years too early. Who knows? But when you tell me this is a guy, there's a guy who has outlier fastball velocity, which is a very important trait, has good fastball shape, at least average fastball shape. You're going to have to contract the vertical movement he gets and adjust for the major league ball. For those who don't know at home, the major league ball is harder to generate right on than the double A or below ball. The triple A ball is actually the major league ball. So we'll get to see what his vertical movement looks like with the triple A ball, but he has a good feel for spin. He has a really good sweeping slider. I actually have to take back some comments I've made previously about his gyro slider, because it's 88 miles per hour. I originally thought it was 86 miles per hour. I got some bad data, but it's actually firmer than I thought it was, and it performed better than I thought it did. And he has a 90 mile per hour changeup that is a good pitch. I'm not sure what part of the movement plot he needs necessarily. He can throw the changeup to righties if he needs and he doesn't have a sinker, but I also don't think it's impossible for him to add a fifth pitch. I don't think he needs to add a fifth pitch. He is an outlier. He's an outlier in terms of physical traits. I think the command's obviously a big if, but dude, if he's going to walk 11 to 12% of batters face, I don't care. He's going to strike out over 30% of them. He's not going to give up as many home runs as people think, unless he's facing Aaron Judge every at bat. But yeah, I see it, man. I see a starter here.
Honestly, the most intriguing, you saying that, I do think that's a bit of a reach for this year. It would take a very good season of development for that to happen. And I do think he would have to locate a lot better this season that he did last year to come up. But I'm looking at Cam Schlittler's 2024 minor league numbers, And they're not too dissimilar from what LeGrande did this past season in the minors, both in terms of where they were pitching at, like they're mostly high A and double A. And then their strikeout and walk ratios were kind of similar. LeGrande was walking, I think his walk rate was about 2 points higher, but his strikeout rate was also a little bit higher. So kind of very similar ratios in terms of their last full, their most recent full minor league season. And as we saw with Schlittler, he came up and he learned throughout the year so fast that he was able to improve his command once he got to the major league level throughout August and September. And by the time it was October, he was dotting up everyone. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that LeGrande is starting for us by the end of the season. But I will also say, if we're fully healthy by the end of the season, hopefully we won't need him to be a starter, and we could have him in the bullpen for the October run, because that 102, 103 out of the pen at that time might be even more valuable than him.
I mean, that's a showstopper in a playoff series.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, once you get to October, outs are outs, so you can take him wherever you can get him.
Yeah, and again, I mean, if he comes up as a reliever, I think I would agree it's kind of the ideal outcome because it indicates starting pitching health, which I guess I didn't factor enough into my, I didn't want my take to be perceived as ideal outcome for the Yankees. This is not, for the Yankees, it is Cole, Fried, Rodon, Schlittler are their four best starters, but in my Yankee fan baseball brain, I can never accept the idea that the guys who are your four best on paper are your four best, or even your available guys come postseason time. One quick note on LeGrande, and this will be my final note. I'll kind of let you guys get your final licks in here. Cam Schlittler had a 63.6% strike rate in 2024 between high A and double A as a minor leaguer. Carlos LeGrande, 63.2%. So if a 0.4% difference in strike rate is the difference between a guy being a big leaguer or not, I think you have a really weird bar for what is or is not a big league striking rate.
Miz's, out of curiosity?
Mizorowski's I'm surprised I didn't mention him at all, because I actually think that's a fun comp here. I don't have it on me right now. I'll try and pull it up, and I don't know. The issue is I can't spell his name very well, so I just put in Mizorowski and accidentally pulled up Bill Mazeroski. Don't even know if I got the name nailed down.
Yeah, because Miz is average fastball velo 99.3. I know he had some walk stuff in Double A. I'm pretty sure
he walked a lot in Double A, dude. He was 14% all throughout the high minors until this past year, where he was down to 12%. He was down where Carlos was this past year.
Yeah, and look, similar, I guess, size profile. He's a lot skinnier than Carlos, but he's 6'7 as well.
Yeah, dude, oh my God. The fact that Carlos is so built, too, that's the ridiculous, heck, dude. It's crazy.
It gives him crazy pitching presence, too, dude. Just he has that little strut off the mound that's like, I can't believe I'm here. Like, you're gone, you're gone, you're gone. Let me just walk it off.
Also, quick note, I found the strike rate for Mizorowski this past minor league season. It was 63.6%, so basically Schlittler's mark last year and 0.4% better than LeGrande's mark this past year. He walked 11.4% of big league batters in 66 innings. Now, I also want to preface this by saying, just because the way that walk rates adjust for somebody, or the way they change into big leagues, is not something you can universally slap on everybody.
Yeah,
you would generally contract your strikeout to walk rate from the minor leagues to the major leagues, but that doesn't always apply even. That could change. I mean, there's a lot of moving pieces here, but I do think Mizorowski is a good comparison in the sense that these are outlier stuff monsters. Mizorowski's fastball is better, in my opinion. It's just the weird release coupled with the freakish extension. LeGrande doesn't get downhill as well as Mizorowski does. But I also think that LeGrande is a more complete pitcher. Mizorowski's was 55% fastball in the big leagues. LeGrande was sub 50% fastball in Double A. I don't think LeGrande is going to suddenly become a 55, 60% fastball guy. That's something Schlittler also struggled with. Schlittler was very fastball reliant. I actually don't think it's going to be an issue with LeGrande. But any final thoughts we have on him before we move on here?
No, I was just curious, because I lump all these, young flamethrowers, together, Schlittler, Mizorowski, Chase Burns even, and kind of, Bubble Chandler will be next. I'm just curious kind of where all their walk rates fit in, because those are guys that are going to be, pitching in the big leagues. And if the walking thing's the only thing we're worried about, the only thing that fans are worried about or the Yankees are worried about, it's kind of right there in line with a lot of guys we saw come up. That's really all I got on it.
Yeah, I think people are aware of LeGrande right now in a way that they weren't last week, which is very cool. But also means there's more eyes on him. So let's see how he handles this year now that he's pretty much, is he T100 everywhere now?
Yes.
Does every list have him up there? Yeah. So like now that he has the expectations, I want to see how he can handle it. I want to see if he can take those strides forward. And also I want to comment on the fact that he is a social media fiend. Every single time you guys put out a post about him, he's always putting it on his story. I tweeted about him when he struck out Judge, and he liked my tweet. So it's like he sees the clips. He sees everyone talking about him. So
just like that's gonna be for real, man.
It's interesting too. Like the Yankees would have two of the hardest throwing big league starters if they had both LeGrande and Schlittler in the rotation at the same time. So I do think it's funny because their velocity's kind of been a thing that they haven't had in recent years, despite the comments in my tweets about LeGrande being flooded with how his velocity helped the Yankees win a World Series.
Yeah.
They didn't fucking throw hard, so maybe if they threw harder, they'd actually win a World Series or something. I don't know.
The fact that we have Cole and Rodon, who have both been that guy when they came up and have had to evolve as they've aged, I think that's going to be good for both of these guys as they come up, especially even just in this camp. Like, LeGrande going to have access to Cole and Rodon and kind of like learn how these guys evolved as pitchers. So maybe he won't be making the same mistakes that they did when they were younger. Because as we know, both of them kind of took a few years to get their careers off the ground. So that's going to be interesting tutors for our young flamethrowers to have.
Yeah, and again, I'm really excited to see how this spring training will go for LeGrande. Elmer Rodriguez will get the ball on Friday for the spring opener in Sarasota, and the home opener, which is going to be really cool for LeGrande to start because he's going to be wearing the pinstripes, because that's how it goes as tradition for the George M. Steinbrenner Field Grapefruit League opener. I will be tracking every game because I will be hanging my Grapefruit League champion banner if they end up finishing with a top record. I am adamant about that. Let's talk a little bit about Aaron Judge, who was kind of tied into the LeGrande story, did refer to him as special. I thought it was cool to hear Judge talk about LeGrande, but also had some other interesting comments. I'll read the full or a part of the quote here. It's not the full quote, but it's the part of the quote that was publicized everywhere with some additional context. He says, early on, it was pretty tough to watch. I'm like, man, we're the New York Yankees. Let's go out there and get the right people, get the right pieces to go out there and finish this thing off. We've got a special group of players here. We've got a good young core. It was frustrating, but I think we're right where we need to be. This was in regard to the offseason and the early stages of inactivity for the New York Yankees. Chris, we'll start with, or Jacob, we'll start with you here because I started with Chris on LeGrande. What did you take away from this quote? Were you kind of stunned to see Judge be so blunt? Do you think this is Aaron Judge trying to secretly say that the offseason sucked? Like, what were your takeaways from this?
I mean, it was a little bit more candid than I think we're used to seeing Aaron Judge. So, yeah, it surprised me a little bit, but I'm not buying that much on that. I don't know. I don't think it matters that much because, like he said, we ultimately ended up with a pretty solid offseason. We got all the guys we needed to get back, and we have a little bit more depth than we did last year. So I do think it's the perfect quote to kind of feed the vitriol that people have had about Hal and Cashman and whatever. But if you read the full thing, Judge is like, well, at first I was nervous, but then we brought everyone back and it was fine. It's like, that's kind of how I felt this offseason too. So I do appreciate the candidness, but I don't know. I'm not taking that much away from what he said.
This might be the most honest we've heard Aaron be. And I mean, it's funny because like with grandparents, like the older they get, like the more honest you hear them talk. And this is kind of like the baseball version of that. And he was super honest because at the beginning of the offseason, who in the division was spending a ton of money? Who in the division was linked to Kyle Tucker? Like who in the division were all Yankees fans pointing like, damn, like they were just in the World Series and it looks like they're spending crazy. And then obviously off seasons are long. And so things kind of change. But I think he kind of just echoed that because I think not just – like, I consider all three of us pretty rational Yankees fans. Early in the offseason, with the way the Blue Jays were maneuvering, it's like both eyebrows raised. Like, look, they felt like they were close. They essentially tasted it. 7-game series with the Dodgers. Let's go spend. And if you are a Yankees person, even rational or not, a Hal hater or not, a Cashman hater or not, like, that had people's attention. So I thought that was just really honest for him to acknowledge that. But again, the same way the offseason's long, the quote is long. And at the back half, it's like, yeah, but we got what we needed. And I think that is really, really important. Important context, because the first half of this quote will be used by the section of like Hal and Cash haters. Like, look, even Aaron Judge doesn't think he's got the best team put around him or the best chance to win from this front office. So that's my general takeaway. I like the honesty, but I also – you don't get the honesty because you get taken out of context too much, kind of depending on the spacing of it.
I think you your line about like the grandparents aging, getting more honest. Maybe this is the case with Judge, but it's definitely the case with Bryce Harper right now. I don't know if you've seen that whole saga with him and Dombrowski right now. That's been very interesting to see. And it's
he's
like
on a media tour, Jacob. Like he was doing Bussin' with the Boys talking about it.
I mean, I'll say this when it comes to like the Bryce Harper stuff and kind of comparing it to the stuff with Judge. I think Bryce Harper is very openly and candidly like, this was, I don't understand why this was said about me. And he has said it to multiple people, to multiple media scrums in multiple ways throughout the offseason. And I think that is a situation of a GM. Like, I don't think that needed to be said. I that's my stance on it. But with Judge, like, I think his candidness should also be applied to the fact that he said he liked the offseason. And this is not, I think I've seen some people suggest, well, he's saying it because that's the company in the line. I want everyone to go back to game four of the American League Division Series. The postseason ends, and Aaron Judge's media scrum includes him saying, I want Grisham and I want Bellinger back.
He wanted those two, right.
Ask Brian Cashman, ask Aaron Boone, ask Aaron Judge. Those are like the three kind of pillars of leadership. The captain of the New York Yankees, the manager of the New York Yankees, the general manager of the New York Yankees. And ask them how they all felt about the 2025 team on August 10th. And then ask how they felt about that team on November 10th and December 10th and January 10th and February 10th. They'll say the exact same thing. We really liked the group we had after the deadline. We really liked the group we had after the deadline. Aaron Boone went as far as to say he thought that was the best team he had managed.
Yeah,
he managed a team that went to the World Series.
I think it bears repeating every week that people are going to rip on running it back because they didn't win last year. You can put the same team together and run a simulation 1,000 times. There's no team that's going to win every single time, no matter what. This is baseball. It's random. So the fact that they didn't win a best of five series doesn't disqualify them from being a championship caliber team. And Judge knows this. Cashman knows this. All these people know this who are in the organization. And just because they had it was an embarrassing series. We really did. We got beat down in three out of those four games. And it felt terrible, but it wasn't because of the personnel. It was because they had a bad week. So yeah. I think the concept of running it back is totally fine with me, provided we continue to get better throughout the year and fill the holes as they come up. Because obviously there's going to be different roadblocks this year. There's different roadblocks every year. So let's see how they handle it this year.
The other part of it, I'm counting Gerrit Cole as an offseason addition. Like, if they get to playoff baseball and it's Gerrit Cole, Max Fried, and Rodon healthy, like, that's a far different team than a year ago. Like super different than a year ago in the postseason. I keep looking at that. It's like, yeah, they're running it back, but probably getting, like, the heart and soul of that pitching staff back. So that's kind of where I'm at in a vacuum.
I do think, look, I don't love the way they address the bullpen. I understand there are talented lottery tickets they added. There are guys I really like in that group. Cade Winquest is, like, I'm adopting Cade Winquest FC. Everyone is welcome to join. We have not begun spring training yet. You're more than welcome to join. But, like, I would have appreciated a more stable option there, especially when you lose Devin Williams and Luke Weaver. But on the general overall point of this offseason, I wanted two outfielders. They added two outfielders. I wanted at least another body in the rotation. Was Ryan Weathers inside my top two or three perfect ideal offseason picks? No. But is he someone who I believe in as a potential rotation option that can be in a contender starting five? Yes. And I think the ceiling is even greater. Maybe a guy who takes the ball for them in one of their first three postseason games. I think there were they have a really strong bench, which I don't think gets talked about enough. Their worst player might actually, like, genuinely not trying to troll, be Anthony Volpe at some point during the year. Like, that might be their worst position player on the roster at some point during the year. That tells you something. That tells you that those are positive markers for a roster. We'll see how it plays out. It is kind of interesting that the same crowd that will tell you running it back will lead to them not winning the World Series are also telling you Trent Grisham will regress. So you have to acknowledge that just because, like, it's funny to simultaneously say they cannot win the World Series because they did not with that group last year, but then say that an outcome for one of the players in that team will be dramatically different, yeah. Indicating that you do recognize that bringing back the same player for a team or bringing back the same team can lead to wildly different results in either direction. But we only choose to look at that when it's in the direction that harms the Yankees. I could get into that.
I was on a Trent Grisham crusade on Twitter the other day. Oh, it was,
you guys
was a
both
fun
were.
One.
It was awesome. It was awesome to watch. Had the swords out for Trent.
Yeah.
It's my just, dog. Again, we're at the, like, whether it works or doesn't work, we won't know until they play baseball games. That's a fact. But at the end of the day, man, like I think they got good players. I want them to get a center fielder. I don't think a better center fielder changed teams. I want them to get a left fielder. I think Kyle Tucker's the only other left fielder they could have gotten who would have moved me more. And I would have been obviously thrilled with Kyle Tucker. Bellinger's the second best player I thought was available for them in free agency. So they got the second best player on the board. We'll see how that works out. That could work out terribly. Once upon a time, Steven Strasburg was the second best player who could get a position group. That didn't work out well. But also on that same note, once upon a time, the best player you could land in free agency was Albert Pujols, or Patrick Corbin was your 1.1 for a rotation upgrade. Like, there are good cases, there are bad cases. Ending up with LeMahieu the first time around was a great outcome. Ending up with him the second time around wasn't a great outcome when he was perceived to be a better player. Like, we have to let these things play out, my mindset.
Back in the day, we ended up going with Gary Sheffield over Vlad Guerrero Sr., and that was a straight up George move. Like, that we totally spurned Guerrero, who wanted to come to us, and George like went on his own and offered Sheffield the contract, and that's why Vladdy Jr. hates the Yankees now. Yeah. So that ended up blowing up in our faces. So it's like you never know. You never know how it's how it's gonna work out.
Imagine if we didn't trade for Devin Williams and we had Durbin at third and didn't have a guy who blew every freaking game in the first month of the year. Like, you can't tell me that trading for Devin Williams was going to turn out poorly in December because you had some incredible foresight that he would perform poorly and that Durbin would outplay any third baseman you'd have on the roster. Although I think it was fair. You could have reasonably assumed that Durbin would outplay Oswaldo Cabrera. And I mean, Oswald Peraza and Pablo Reyes aren't inspiring options, but I thought that the offset in value between Durbin and whatever you had in the infield would be more than made up by the fact you had a top three closer in baseball at the time. Yeah. It didn't work out that way.
I mean,
shit happens.
I never thought Durbin was a fit for the park just because he's a fly ball righty. But yeah, I don't know. I you can't be mad at the process of that trade just because it didn't work out perfectly. I mean, Devin was still awesome for us down the stretch. So,
and it's the point of, like, it has to play out. Right, like we don't know. Did I think that Trent Grisham was going to hit 34 home runs at any point in February or March? No. Even when he was awesome in April, I was like, "That's cool. He's going to slow down, and Jason's going to take the job." And then he just didn't.
Never slowed.
And
down.
He played through a
hamstring injury and was still mashing.
Dude, there are times at the deadline where I was like, "So they're going to trade him, right?" And then they're going to trade him and start Jason.
I thought he was gone for a little bit there, man. I made a little Trent edit. I was like, "Oh, Trent's gone."
Yeah, like, I'm gonna miss dude. Him. Things, there were times during last offseason where I was like, damn, we couldn't really, like, damn, I would have loved to sign Jack Flaherty to that contract the Tigers gave him because there was no QO. No, I'm glad we didn't do that. I'm glad. I'm happy. Things can change. We'll see how these things play out. But any final notes on Judge's comments before we get into our final topic here? Alrighty, well, we'll roll into the current logjam that is in the outfield. Brian Cashman called Spencer Jones blocked right now. He said he's blocked in the organization, and he said that every day playing time could work really well or work in the best favor for Jason Dominguez. We'll start with Jacob here. Talk to me about Jason, man. Do you think he's going to start in AAA, and do you think that's the right move for him?
I think assuming everyone's healthy, I think he'll start in AAA, and he'll probably stay in AAA unless someone is really not hitting in the majors or someone gets hurt. And as you know, it's a 162-game season. We're relying on four starting outfielders plus Stanton, the DH. So someone's going to get hurt eventually, and Jason will be up eventually. But I do think it's important. Like, we've been talking about this all offseason, and my stance on Jason is that he's a very talented player. He's a very talented athlete. And he probably has the most important attribute in that he can hit righties really well at the major league level already. But everything else is lacking, and it's like he's not going to get better against lefties by riding the bench against lefties. He's not going to become a better outfielder by starting three or four times a week at most and then being pulled in the seventh inning for a defensive replacement. So I like the idea of getting him as many reps as possible. He's still just 23 years old. So it's like, this guy has so much more room to grow. And stunting his growth by keeping him on the bench in a role that doesn't really fit what we need on the roster, assuming everyone's healthy, I think it makes the most sense for him to start in AAA.
I mean, he's a guy that the more he played in AAA, the better he got. It's like a Mr. Download Information, and that'll be generally pretty good, I think. And kind of, I mean, you're right. Like, you're not going to get better against lefties. Or, yeah, you're not going to get better against lefties by never hitting lefties. And so, I mean, minor leagues works. And I think that, you know, the whole Jason Dominguez thing, the people, I mean, I understand it. Like, Twitter's not a real place. But the general sense of, like, giving up on him is because he's just been a famous prospect for too long, is what it is. Like, he's been a famous prospect for too long with too big of expectations. And I think people are, like, getting a little bit impatient. But I'm 100% okay with him, you know, being a AAA. I mean, I just cover a story on the Guardian side. They're about to start the kid that they asked to start in center field in the postseason. They're going to start him in AAA to get him, like, every day at bat. So it's like, for me, okay, well, he wasn't going to play every day with the big leagues. Yeah, like, get him as many at bats as possible. Send him, keep him down there, let him work on things, because it's harder to ask him to improve from the bench rather than improving playing every day. And also, like, you're the Yankees. Like, you right now, every game matters. I mean, we saw kind of late in the year, like, how close the race was between them and Toronto for that, you know, for that first place slot. And it's like, look, I don't want to lose games trying to get him reps. I can develop him a little bit more down there, kind of gauge trade value if it is there. And then when an injury happens, because yes, Jacob's right, one will happen, we feel like we're not getting him out of the freezer. Like, we're like, at least he's been playing baseball.
Yeah. And you're going to be saving on service time as well, that he's not up on. Like, you're wasting 7 days of service time a week on him playing two or three times a week if he's up. Right. Like, how many at-bats did he get in the second half last year? Like, 100, 150? That wasn't enough to be worth it.
Yeah, and I also add, in regard to playing time and the handling of Jason Dominguez, look, the Yankees gave him every opportunity to win the starting job to start last year. And Trent Grisham hit 34 home runs, and Cody Bellinger was awesome, and Ben Rice was awesome and won the first base job, and Giancarlo Stanton came back and was way better than anybody thought he could be. Everything that could go wrong for Jason to not get runway happened. Ben Rice was awesome. First base spot taken away. DH spot taken away. Like, there was, look, I don't want to, you know, doom a little bit here, but I mean, you'd be crazy to not think that going into last year, there's at least some collapse risk with Giancarlo Stanton. Like, if you asked 2025, February 17th, Ryan Garcia his thoughts on Jason's playing time, I'd be like, he's the third best outfield on the team. And if he's not, Giancarlo Stanton's going to collapse or something. And if he doesn't, then I'm sure there's going to, like, Bellinger could end up sucking or something. Or maybe Judge gets hurt. I don't know. Like, I would have been able to spin myself into believing Jason was going to play every single day, because it wasn't fathomable to think he wouldn't be the third best outfielder on the roster, and everything else went right. So maybe that doesn't happen this year. Maybe everything goes wrong for Jason to end up in AAA, and he ends up on the big league team and playing more than we think. He has an unexpected, like, who knows what ends up happening here. But the Yankees have to win baseball games at the end of the day. You don't raise a banner. The Yankees didn't get a banner for Ben Rice hitting the way he did last year. They didn't get a banner for Cam Schlittler pitching the way he did last year. You get a banner for winning the World Series. That's the only banner Yankee fans care about. And I think this conversation about handling young players with Jason is, it's so disingenuous, because it always ignores the fact that they've consistently had a better option on the roster. Even in 2024, when I hated the idea of Verdugo playing over him. Can we be honest about that now? And I'll even be the first person to admit it. Verdugo is a better option to roll with in the postseason. Neither guy could really hit at that point. One guy could catch a fly ball. The other guy couldn't. It's that simple. Like, Jason didn't beat Verdugo for the job. He didn't deserve to beat Verdugo for the job.
Verdugo a better option than Grisham? Out of career?
No, I actually think Grisham was clearly the better option. I think that is the failure.
That's my only Verdugo complaint.
I agree with you. Yeah. I think that's exactly how I feel about it. Mm-hmm. But, like, what else? How many wins should the Yankees cost themselves to play Jason Dominguez? And would fans be actually okay? Like, I know it's, like, I'm sure someone's going to say, yes, I would sacrifice 3 wins. Because the answer is no.
Is an astronomical. When you think about it in, like, the analytical sense, if you're losing 3 games because you want a guy to get reps, that's kind of crazy.
And it wouldn't be that much of an impact to clarify. I don't think Jason's so much of a detriment.
He's still a good ball player. Like, I hope everyone. Right. There's so much to like about him as a young ball player, but he's obviously just not complete, and he's not going to become complete unless he gets reps.
And I'll even ask this. Would you sacrifice 1 win in the regular season for without any, you have no future knowledge of how many games it'll take to win the AL East. If you win the AL East by three games, if you don't win the AL East by three games, if your playoff positioning is or is not affected, would you sacrifice one win to get Jason Dominguez 100 more plate appearances?
I don't think so.
My answer is a clear no. And the only way you can say yes is if you don't care whether the Yankees win the World Series or not. If you don't care, I mean, that's a little bit weird, I guess, but fine. Like, I just care about consistency in the argument, right? Don't tell me Brian Cashman's a failure, he hasn't won a World Series, and also tell me, yes, the team should actively make themselves worse to play the guy I really like. If you want to root, like, look, the NBA has embraced this. You can be a player fan. You don't have to be a fan of a team. If you're just a fan of a player, that's fine.
Well, my favorite argument is that, oh, well, Boone and Cashman play Volpe every day, but then with Jason, they put him on the bench, and it's like, well, yeah, Volpe was our only shortstop last year. Jason was our fourth best outfielder. It's the two different situations. So, especially going into this year, we have an even stronger outfield. And now Spencer Jones is right there, too. Yeah. So it's like, this outfield is deep, man.
And don't tell me it's personal, because Jones hasn't ever threatened Jason's job. Jones can play center field. Like, Jones has, if you were going to do the whole bench role thing, Jones has a greater, more of a versatile piece because he can play center field. In like he can do things off the bench that Jason can't do, and they never considered making the switch last year. So don't tell me it's personal. It's not personal. If it were personal, that switch happened. And if that switch happened, then I could go, maybe it's personal. But even then, I would say he can play center field. Jason can't. I know Boone mentioned that Jason might get some work in center field this spring training, but I seriously and very seriously doubt the Yankees will ever, 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 ever let a game be decided by Jason's ability to catch a fly ball in center field, much less than left field.
Speaking of the videos I've been seeing on Twitter, I saw some of the outfield just like pop fly drills, and man, Jason just doesn't look like he has it out there. And it's like, he could get better. He's an athlete. He could get better at it. But like, I just saw it was like three pop-ups. I forget who posted one, like either Hoke or one of the other beat guys. He took three pop flies. He took a false step on two of them, and he took a bad route on the other one. And it's like, he's just got, you have to learn how to play the outfield if you're going to make this team, on this good of a team. So, I don't know what more you could ask for from the management if this guy just can't run a good route to a fly ball. So it's like, I don't know what else there is to say about that.
I will say for the fan base from Boston, if you're trolling on Jason Dominguez, I just want you to know there's $60 million guaranteed to a guy who also can't field the baseball and hasn't hit. Yes. So I don't want to hear. I really don't want to hear it right now about overhyped prospects. There is a guy who has $60 million hooked to his name, regardless of how the performance looks. Who is a general, like, Jason's a very bad defensive player. Also was a generationally bad defensive player at this point in time and did not hit at all. Did not hit a lick. Jason could be a strong side platoon on a lot of teams right now in the outfield. Is that Christian Campbell wouldn't make a lot of opening day rosters for contenders. So I just want to make that very clear for fan base up north. They're north, yeah, from New York. So fan base up north.
And Christian Campbell, shout out to him for making Cam Schlittler famous, minor league famous.
Fact. Shout out. I will feel bad for the fact that I'm the Christian Campbell detractor now, because his brother's only impression of me is the Cam Schlittler tweet of him striking out Campbell, which wasn't targeted. It just, I thought it was impressive. Like, he's a former big leaguer. Like,
yeah, he was a big name.
Yeah,
and at the time, his brother
committed to play for Ohio State. And he went to Georgia Tech. So it was like my two schools. So I have a lot of love for the Campbell family. But you're right. No, you're right.
And I will be intellectually consistent here, because I still think Jason could be a good big leaguer. I still very much believe Christian Campbell can be a good big leaguer. Don't know if he can. The same way, I also don't like the star upside for Jason. Not sure I believe in it, because I just have a hard time envisioning really bad defensive player becoming a perennial all-star. It's just not how I really value defense. For Christian Campbell, I've kind of gone from, oh, he's like a guy who can play shortstop and second base, and he's a really good athlete, and he can hit, like, to, I don't know where he's going to play, but I think he can hit. It's like Jason. I don't know where he's going to play, but I think he can hit. So we'll see how. We'll see how Jason develops. We'll see how this year
looks. My last point on Jason, too, is he wears a comically large glove. I don't know if anyone else, like, talked about this.
He looks like a cartoon character. The glove is so big, and when he looks up, it looks like he doesn't feel comfortable, like, running. It's
comical, dude. It's like an 18-inch glove or something. It's crazy.
Why is his glove bigger than Aaron's?
It looks like the novelty gloves people wear in the outfield, like in the stands. Like, I don't know. It's hilarious, and it's like maybe that's slowing him down. It's like knocks him off his path because he has so much wind resistance.
It throws off.
Maybe
his
that's why he takes bad routes.
Messes up the balance, you know.
Yeah.
I never envisioned we'd be talking about the glove affecting the equilibrium of an outfielder.
I mean, Ryan, the glove looks huge when he's running.
It is huge. No. Like, I saw the tweet. I agree with the tweet. Like, I think you're right, actually. Like, I can't believe I'm buying into it, but I do. I do, man. I fully buy in.
Gotta resize that thing.
They do. And honestly, like, it is weird they won't play him in right field. I feel like right field at Yankee Stadium is the position he should play if somebody got hurt. No, like, am I crazy on that? Like, he should not ever play left field at Yankee Stadium if you can stop it from happening.
Yeah, but Judge is locked in right field.
But if somebody's presumably hurt, you can just DH Judge, play him in right field against lefties, because you're never going to play Jason against lefties. You put Judge in right field against lefties. You have him DH for most of the time. Bellinger either plays left or center. Grisham plays the other position. If Grisham plays center, Bellinger plays left. Bellinger plays center.
Yeah, I would just want Judge in the outfield then, because he could field the ball.
Right, but, like, I'm just saying, he can field the ball, yes, but I'm just saying, if you're going to put Jason in the outfield, like, why not let him play some right field? I think that's crazy to never let him play some right field to me. But that's neither here nor there. I could be wrong. Like, you could be right. Maybe I'm not thinking about, like, the lack of value there. Maybe there's more value in getting actual center field reps. I don't know, but I think right field just makes some semblance of sense to have in the toolbox. With Spencer Jones, though, I mean, Cashman was pretty upfront, like, blocked. He's blocked. And I happen to agree. Look, I don't want to be the Spencer Jones hater, because I think hater is such, like, I don't like that word. But I do think there is a real barrier or hurdle that's stopping Jones right now. And it's the fact that his contact percentage last year in the minor leagues is about 0.1% worse than Joey Gallo's career major league contact rate. I just don't think you can put him in the big leagues right now. He has to make a skill jump in the contact department. Not that it's impossible, but he does have to do it before I go, okay, yep, big league him. Because right now, I just don't think the contact rates are tenable right now. Jacob, we'll start with you here. Where are we at with Spencer Jones?
I mean, I'm going to be as patient as possible with Spencer Jones because the upside is so high. And he's also a good enough defender in the center field based on all the reports we've seen that the floor isn't, like, disgustingly low, because he could at least do that even if the bat doesn't translate. But, like, I'm doing this I'm working on a video right now, the top 50 prospects from 10 years ago, and Gallo is in the top 10. He was seen as a really, like, big time prospect. Now, obviously, he was much younger at the time of the ranking. I think he was 21 years old back then, but his, like, AA and AAA whiff and strikeout rates were pretty comparable to Jones, and he was seen as a top 10 prospect, whereas Jones, who I think has some more interesting tools than Gallo, even like the power is similar, and then Jones is a better athlete. He's faster. He can play a more valuable position, but Jones isn't cracking any top 100 lists right now. I think that's partially because Gallo didn't work out, because he's the only precedent of this type of player. But even then, Gallo had like 3 or 4 pretty damn good years. So I think a lot of people have written Jones off a little bit too early, especially considering he's only been a full-time position player for, what, like 3 years now?
Yeah, 3 years. Because he was a pitcher, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, years. Yes.
How are his contact numbers compared to, like, Owen Casey's?
Owen Casey's,
like, a grade above him in terms of hit.
Yeah. And I would also say, like, I am not an Owen Casey guy. So yeah, I
thought he had a higher strikeout percentage than Spencer did. I didn't know.
There was a point in time in the minor league season where that was true, but that was no longer true after Jones had a really bad finish
end of the year. Back spasms.
Yeah, and I also want to know. Go ahead, please.
I think Jones' ceiling is much higher than Casey's, though. I think my issue with Casey is that he has a lot of the same downsides as Jones, but without, like, the glass breaking, like,
super,
like,
ceiling.
Top five superstar.
Well, that's
player
why it's so
potential.
Bizarre, because he's, like, universally, like, celebrated, like, amongst, like, baseball.
I don't know. I feel like this past off, I feel like this past few months, he's kind of regressed in the public's view. And I think in the trade that he just got traded, he got traded for Edward Cabrera. Yes. I feel like that kind of revealed how the industry felt about him a little bit, in that he's not this immovable prospect. He's more of a, he's still really highly touted, but not to the extent that maybe we thought he was before that.
Yeah, and I will note with Jones real quick, the thing I have a concern with is, so bat speed aging curve, the dip happens from age 27 to 28. What happened, guess what year Joey Gallo's, guess how old Joey Gallo was in 2022? 28 years old. So Jones's window for being great, I'm not saying is definitively the next 2 to 3 years, but could be the next 2 to 3 years. Now, this is, again, this is one of those things, like with walk rate for minor league to major league, it's not, you cannot universally apply the aging curve to every single player. But if you were going to estimate or project, you would estimate at age 28, 29, or 30 that Spencer Jones will see a dip in bat speed. It's not universal, but it is probable. It is something you could realistically bake into his projection. So the longer it takes for him to be a big leaguer, that is a greater deal of concern. Again, is there a potential, like, is there a world where Spencer Jones has a steeper a point of contact, and he makes contact further back in the plate, and that gives, like, he gives in a little bit of the pull side for some more contact? Sure, and I think he could pull that off. I mean, I think he could pull that off sustainably for half a decade, and if he's good for 5 years, would you take Spencer Jones being like Gary Sanchez, where the first 3 or 4 years are awesome, the back half years aren't that good? Yeah, I would take it in a heartbeat.
100%.
So, I would say that too, like, is
Jones part of it. Jones is less of a, I don't know, we don't have the swing data on him, but he is less of a pull guy than Gallo was.
Yes.
So maybe there is, like, his swing does remind me of Judge's swing in a lot of ways, in that he has power to all fields. He has the same instructor, teacher man, who he does pretty much the same drills and stuff with him, and he's trying to model his swing based on Judge's. Plus, they're like the same size, so obviously, you can never say this guy's going to be Aaron Judge. He has no chance of being Aaron Judge, right? Like, you can never bank on that. But just, like, he's got, like, the skeleton of Aaron Judge. So it's always, you're always going to believe that there's more to be unlocked with him. So I think that this is a guy who probably doesn't make much sense for most teams to trade for, to gamble on. But for us, it's like, we're going to give him as many chances as we can down the road. And maybe we'll see where he's at this year. If he has a big season in AAA and someone goes down, maybe he gets the call over Dominguez. Who knows? Who knows what happens this season?
Yeah, I don't disagree in a sense that the upside should, like, I wouldn't just trade Spencer Jones for scraps, because there's just no value in that for the Yankees. But I think there is value in the, even if there's a 5% chance it's a good big leaguer, like, that's a 5% chance it's a good big leaguer. He's also, the proximity matters. Like, there's a greater chance he's a good big leaguer than most prospects, because he's on the precipice of being a big leaguer. So we'll see what ends up happening here. Any final thoughts you guys have on Jones, Dominguez, the Yankees as a whole?
I think a lot of people are kind of, like, getting antsy with these guys sticking in AAA for so long, because, like, Jones entering his age 25 season, Jason's entering, what, his age 23 or 24 season now. But you have to look at the roster. Like, they don't fit on the roster today. Next year, Grisham's a free agent. Year after that, Stanton's gone. There's going to be playing time opening up in the outfield very soon, assuming we don't extend Grisham. And either way, I don't think Grisham's going to last in center field beyond this year anyway. So these guys, their season this year in AAA is going to really determine how the franchise views them in the future, to be gunning for those plate appearances that leave in the next couple of off seasons.
Yeah, and we'll see what ends up happening. I think, again, like, I don't think it's a bad thing to have major league caliber players in AAA. I don't think it is, especially when your DH is Giancarlo Stanton, when, like, Bellinger's had various IL stints over the years.
Yeah, we got lucky with him last year. He's had a lot. He hasn't had many fully healthy seasons in his career.
Judge had the IL stint this past year. Grisham could always have an IL stint. Like, things happen. Things happen. I mean, that's how things happen, is how Ben Rice went from, God, where is he going to play, to, oh, he's your everyday DH, and he's maybe the second best hitter on this team? ? Like that's how you end up with that.
We've been talking about, like, the bench depth going into the season, but it's like, we have the AAA depth too. We have a lot of guys who are ready to be called up and step into an everyday role, whether it's, if we need a center fielder desperately, we could put Jones out there, even if the bat's not 100%. If we need a corner outfielder, Jason's good enough to be an everyday player for a period of time. If we need a backup shortstop, if Caballero is hurt and Volpe's not back, we have Schumann now who can at least play the position, which we did not have last. I cannot emphasize this enough. We had no backup shortstop going into last season. So I like the depth so much more this year than I have in the past. So I am happier with this offseason than the average fan for that reason.
Yeah, again, it's not bad to have depth. So we'll see what ends up happening as we continue to get through spring training. Will we have more to talk about in terms of playing time for Jason Dominguez? Well, certain starters have more pressure on them to make the leap from AAA to the major leagues. We'll talk about all that and more in the coming weeks. We got you guys covered with spring training coverage, major league, minor league, all that stuff. Make sure you guys support the channel by liking and subscribing. If you're listening to this on audio, whether that's Spotify or Apple, leave a 5-star rating and download as well. You can support what we do on social media by just typing in Fireside Yankees on any social media platform you use, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, and of course, this YouTube page. Finally, I want to point out the channels that Jacob and Chris run. For Jacob, it's And That's Baseball. For Chris, it's Fireside Baseball and Dead Air Sports. I was faking you out by starting out with Fireside Baseball. I always start with Dead Air, and then I
go. No. I want you to start with Fireside Baseball every trip. I always yell at you post show about it. So
okay, all right. Well, you know what?
Fireside Baseball.
I think this is a fair. I think that's a good concession. We can meet in the middle, right? Meet in the middle. I love that. But thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll see you guys in the next one, and peace out, everybody. Perfect.